där keffel klipper i klopp. Min där keffel drott, drott, drott. Lann i mun i vilaure kom. Frau drosset olif, bum, bum, bum. Gari, akari.
Croeso and welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to tow the cart of history, the carriage of booze, the wagon of banter. As usual, I am Jack, your co-driver for this evening, but I'm joined by the man with the reins, the man that gets you from A to B, the enigmatic Frankenberry.
It's always, you always start off and I go, I don't like this, and then about three lines in I go, I fucking love this.
It's always it's my talent.
A minute ago you said to me, what's another word for driver? And was your alternative co-driver? Is that the word you came up with?
No.
Oh, was it
I was the co-driver. I went man with the reins. I thought that was a bit more romantic.
Yeah, I like that. That's not too bad.
Yeah, if I just went, I'm a co-driver, but the other one's a driver.
A driver. he's the actual Adam Driver of the whole affair.
Yeah. Adam Driver would have been good. That's a good reference. Also, thanks for outing me as someone who can't think of his own words.
Well, we say every time, we're really not good at like scripted stuff. Which kind of, I suppose, is a good thing for the pod. But like, we don't ever like, whenever we have to write. So we're not very good at forward planning. So whenever we do these, we always go, "Yeah." So I've done the notes for today's episode, and then so that Jack knows it's kind of on him to do the intro. But we never ever prep that. So when Jack's done it, and then he goes, "Oh, Frank, so you got something written down?" I'm like, no, absolutely not. And then we panic, and we just have the other one to sit in silence whilst the other one thinks of something to introduce it.
Yeah, all you hear is the little click clacking of the keyboard. Don't you go? And then people go, "Oh, sorry, oh shit."
What's
another word for driver?
Yeah. As I'm just scrolling through my phone waiting to see. This could be a fraught episode because me and Jack, it's currently 5 to 11 on a Tuesday night, and we've just come off like 4 hours of playing Xbox with our friends, and it got curtailed because Jack lost his head. Because we all play Xbox and he's got a PlayStation. This is very intricate nerd shit, but it made it quite hard for him to play another game with us. And Jack, who is cool as a cucumber kind of person, really, I'm the hothead. I'm the one who's angry and like gets really reactive and has to say sorry. Jack was like, this is fucking bullshit. This is absolutely fucking bullshit. This is pathetic.
Yeah. I tried to explain. We had a little a powwow before this, didn't we, to calm me down.
We did have a little powwow.
Yeah. But basically, I tried to explain to Frank, and he knows full well, that there's very few things that like sort of
rattle
get my goat, right? But one of the things is it's like a certain aspect of technology or some sort of thing like that that doesn't perform the service that it was created for. So like I was trying to get on a chat with the boys. This game we're trying to play has cross-party chat, apparently, for all you nerds out there. Basically, you know, going from PlayStation to Xbox. Oh, Jesus, do you have to fart?
I didn't think you'd pick it up.
You said that the last time, and it very much does. Your mic's impeccable. You're lucky this isn't a Patreon. The Patreons don't get edited. So.
Yeah. Well, we might leave that in. We might not. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. But anyway, so this thing is meant to work. And I was trying my darndest to do it. And it just wouldn't work. So I was occasionally logging in to try and make it work on the chat. And the boy was like, wee, he's back, wee. All happy, full of joy. And I was like, shut up a minute. I'm trying to make it fucking work. Oh, no, I thought you were in there, weren't you? Shut up.
At one point, you go, how does this work? How does this work? How does this work?
Right. Well, someone tell me how it works.
But you weren't waiting for a response. You were just shouting into the void.
Yeah.
And one point, when he came back in, because it was quiet, it'd go, hello, 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 hello. Were you like taking the microphone away from your mouth and you just shouting?
I think when what I did was I said, then, right, you boys just have a game without me now. Because I was like, I need to walk away. I need to compose myself somewhat.
Yeah, but when he said, I'll have a game without us, we went, I actually can't be bothered now. It's drained us. We were all like,
I've ruined the night.
But we thought we weren't going to tell you. We thought we'd just wait for you to come back into the game and we'd all be gone. And he'd have
been God, if you absolutely done that.
Fuming.
If I'd have waded my way through the cables and God knows what else to get in, and then you guys went, yeah, we've all fucked it off. Oh, ta-da. My TV would have been the brunt of it.
So anyway, we'll move on from you being a feisty boy from tech issues. But I thought we should probably tell the listeners about our brilliant nicknames from our school, which were so... my partner was asking me, like, oh, what was your nickname at school? And I told her my one. But I was thinking how shit all of our nicknames were for other people. And I'll start off with one of the ones I had. But what I had was ankle biters, because I grew really quickly. So my trousers went to, like, so far up my legs. So, like, it looked like... So I don't know why they got ankle biters, because your ankles are biting to get your trousers back down. And so I was like, I went from like 5'5" to like 6 foot really quickly. Yeah. And my mum didn't buy me new trousers. So I had these absolute swinging ankles running around. This boy, Tom,
one time, someone just saw your ankles were exposed to the light. And he was like, I'm having him.
He said, why don't you put some jam on your ankles and invite your trousers down for tea? It was such a good slap.
That is a great slam. Actually.
It is pretty good.
That's a slam beyond its years as well, because someone that young shouldn't be able to.
You know, it's a proper old man thing to say, isn't it? Put some jam on your ankles, invite your trousers down for tea, son.
Well, in the same vein, to give just so you're not putting yourself on the chopping block here, I used to have everyone. Well, not everyone, but most people who are listening to this. I've probably seen The Inbetweeners, and they probably know Simon and his hairstyle.
Wave.
Everyone used to say, some people used to say, I copied Simon. No, mate, Simon copied me, all right? I was the originator of that fucking hairstyle.
It was like an ocean of hair coming at you.
Yeah,
with the
tidal wave was one of the nicknames.
The wet look gel.
Yeah, Tidal Wave was one of them. I got one of them, it was called Runway, right? And one time, some guy, imagine if you will, hold your hand in front of you, put down your index finger and your ring finger. So you just got your thumb, your middle, and your little finger up. Someone did that over my head and went, meow, like that, as if a plane was going off it. I thought that was pretty good.
That is good gear.
That was good stuff.
We also had, I was thinking some of the other ones we used to, like, our friends we used to call. So sadly, one of the boys had he had a big head, so it looked like Alien, but instead of calling him just Alien, they used to call him AVP for Alien versus Predator.
Oh god, yeah, that was great. At one point, he did look a bit like a mix of both as well, from these sci-fi nuts out there.
But some of them were so, I wrote them down, so one of them was just called Poo Suit, because he wore a tracksuit that was brown, so it was Poo Suit.
So good, I know who that is, yeah.
Yeah, one boy wore a trucker's cap, so we used to call him Trucker. So we just track it. I was ankle
one guy, biters. Do you remember? You'll know who I'm on about now. He got punched in the face one time in some sort of scuffle, and he had a really big fat lip. So someone just called him Fish.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah. There was someone called Jordan who we just called Gordon, which I find so good.
Yeah.
And we used to Gordon?
Elongate the G. We'd go, Gordon.
Hello, Gordon. How are you doing, Gord?
And he also had came with a whole gesture, if I remember, with your hands. You had to do like a Gordon, and you'd sort of rip your hand up
but then also he had a big chin, so they used to call him the Crimson Chin, and then he'd pull that into you elongate your chin by putting your hands out and go, oh, hello, Gordon.
Do you remember they used to call him Jordan as well? And what they used to do is they used to act like his chin was a flute, and they'd play it like a flute and go, Njord.
What's funny is he was quite a tough kid as well. So just like anyone would just get bullied for anything. One of our friends was called Stone, and that could turn to Stank, and then Stank to Stench. And it just went on for it. But they were so shit, the nicknames were. But every single person had at least two to three nicknames, didn't they?
Oh, definitely. I remember one time there was a guy and dare I say was a bit of a thicko in our year. We were in PE, right, getting changed and everything. And I obviously I had my nicknames. I had Tidal Wave, I had Runway, right? So imagine my fringe, if you like, just pointing up, right, like to the North Star. And this guy went, "Hey, I got a new nickname for you, Jack. Acorn, ha ha ha, Acorn." And I was like, "Acorn?" And I was running through my mind all these scenarios, like, is it like the little tiny bit on the top of an acorn when it's fallen off the trees? I was like, that seems a bit specific. And everyone in the changing room was going, "What do you want about?" And he went, "You know, like a horse with a big like horn on it." And everyone went, "Unicorn, you fucking idiot, unicorn." And everyone, and then exactly the crosshairs shifted from me back to him. And I was like, thank God for
It's so good, isn't it? When the crosshairs were on you, and then right, so like divine, and the target misses, and they go, "Oh, it's such a good feeling there." When you've survived another scathe in school.
The shark smell blood in the water and go for the fucking next guy. Yeah, that's great.
What other ones do we have who were quite... oh, we had our one moment, Josh Good, and then Good became Goodling Pie.
Goodling Pie.
Yeah, they were always so bad. They were always quite sweet. Hello, Goodling Pie.
I felt bad because Josh... sorry if you're listening, Josh. Yeah, because he was the youngest in the year, everyone started calling him Boo Boo.
Yeah,
at one point.
That was good. Yeah. And also, good. Our mate Josh, love him to death, doesn't take jokes the best sometimes. He's an absolute serious perius. Don't he call me Boo Boo.
Kicked off like an absolute Boo Boo, didn't he? Yeah.
Which only fuels the fire. I always think the sweetest one was our friend Shawnee. We used to call him Shawnee Dragioni, which means in Welsh, like Naughty Sean. It was like a very sweet
mischievous
mate.
Sean,
Trixie Sean.
He had a whole song made out of him. He came out really, really unscathed out of that.
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke, though, isn't he?
Yeah, that's true. You say it as if, like, Josh, what a dick.
Well, we're all
Boo Boo.
No, but I mean, it's hard to not like Sean, and like, I think you can find fault with all the rest of us. Sean just goes, he's a lovely lad. Yeah, what was Sean's song?
It was, you walk, how did it go now? It was,
walking along.
There's only one Drigioni, one Drigioni, walking along, singing a song, walking in a Driggsy Wonderland.
Because like football, that's like the most common football song you could ever have. You don't know anything about football, you think, they made this brand new song up about him.
I know more now than I did then. Imagine back then, I'd be wild. Your
eyes have been open.
I was like, who's made come up with this tune? What a banger. Like,
this is golden. They were singing that at my boxing. Do you remember when we were all on the tables?
Vaguely. I was pretty.
You were
hammered.
Pretty hammered, arena there, weren't you? Anyway, before we get on to the rest of the episode, we just quickly plug the Patreon. So thanks to everybody who signed up so far. You get two. If you pay £5 a month, you get 2 free episodes a month. Plus, you get to be involved in some polls and some behind the scenes stuff. There's £10 a month, which is the most popular one, which is insane. We did not think that would be
that
the...
is, We put that up as almost like a, like, no one's going to go for this.
Yeah, then that's the most popular one. That there you get after a month, you get like artwork done, which is similar to like the artwork we have on the episodes for this, but we make one tailored for you. After 3 months, you get an episode on your hometown. Then after 6 months, you get an episode of the Mabinogion. So we make a bit of myth and legend around you after you give us some facts and figures. So those who recently signed up, you would have got your email asking you for some info. So just respond to that and we'll sort that out soon. And if you just want to support the pod, you can do like £1 a month. And if you don't want to give any cashola, if you could drop a 5-star or share it with your mates, we'd absolutely love that. And that would be...
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, that'd be very, very helpful. So, without much further ado, we have mentioned this episode before, where we mentioned, like, offhand, the man versus horse, but it was in one of the earlier episodes, and we didn't go too deep on it, so I thought we'll do a proper deep dive on the crazy story of man versus horse, one of the most bizarre marathons the world's ever seen.
Well, definitely, like you said, we mentioned it before, but I can't believe at the time we didn't go, come on, we've got to make something about this. Yeah. So yeah, we're coming back to it, revisited, if you like.
Yeah, and just before we do, I'm going to re-pour a drink so I don't have to do it during the episode, okay? One sec.
Go for it, mate.
Elevator music. So So this is the only marathon that sounds of any interest to me. It started back in 1980 when local landlord Gordon Green, which sounds like a Marvel character. Oh,
Gordon.
Hello, Gordon. Absolute, yeah.
Absolutely. The chin flute again.
But in that, like, don't they do like alliteration in Marvel films? Am I right in that?
In comics in general, mate. Yeah. Peter Parker and
Gordon
so
Green.
On. There is more than Peter Parker. I just can't think of it.
What would a landlord's superpower be? The ability to throw out drunks like incredibly far, so like launch them from like Aberystwyth to Kailasus. So that'd be one powerful thing. What else could they have?
What a landlord's superpower?
Yeah, if they got bit by like they drunk a radioactive pint.
Being able to stare at you and tell if you were lying, but only about how little rent you've paid. So if you went, "I'm really skint this month," they could just give you a stare. Go, I've spent it all.
I meant like pub landlord.
Oh, I see what you mean.
not as if like some he's gonna come round and say turf you out. He's a local pub landlord. Sorry.
Oh, okay, I got you right. That gives a bit more fun to it.
Yeah, and that explains the drunk reference I said of throwing drunks out incredibly far.
Yeah. I was thinking like, well, you know, if they're renting, then it's their right to be drunk in their own home. a landlord, like a pub landlord.
Yeah, the ability to like illegally stream sports to any electrical device, so they can like get.
Yeah,
they're pretty big on that, aren't they?
Oh, you know what would be a good one? Even though we've been to a pub many a time that has done this, the North Star, the one just have the immaculate ability with your hands to take someone's card in your hands and give them the change back that they needed. You know, like how they used to do in the North Star?
What do they say? They could pay a tenner on card, didn't
they?
So
they say it was a minimum like tenner on card or 15, something absurd like that, right? And then you go, well, I only bought a pint. And back then it was like, I don't know, like £4.
Yeah.
And so, but then you could give them the card and then you'd pay the £15 and they give you the difference in change. But it'd all be in coins all the time. My heavy pockets on the way home. I used to hate it.
Yeah, that was bizarre, wasn't it? Yeah, I also think something to pork scratchings. I don't know. We didn't, obviously that well wasn't very deep. I thought we'd have a really deep well around landlord superpowers.
Remember you said earlier we might be don't write things down. That's one of those. Some pork scratchings, I guess. I don't know.
Let us know your thoughts what a pub landlord superpowers could be.
I know one.
Yeah, go on.
If the coolant was off, you could do a little and it just make it nice and cold again. Yeah, nice, freeze a pint. Cool. Yeah. Cool, nice one. Banter. Yeah.
Or he could give you really shit trivia when you're like, you're trying to put off the bomb and the bomb is connected to like a 1980s quiz question. Anyway, who is the host of like Bullseye or whatever? And he'd be there, I got this one in the bag.
So just someone who has a bit of knowledge. Is that what you're saying?
Okay. All right. We didn't have the whose line is it anyway? Improvisational skills. I thought we did when it came to
you. You tried.
And it is like 11:15 now, so maybe this wasn't the best to try and do some improv with you.
Mind, you were writing this down, going, "This is gonna make us. This is gonna get us so much listeners."
Anyway, let's go back to 1980 when pub landlord, to be clear, Gordon Green overheard two blokes in a pub in the Neuadd Arms, which is this lovely looking Victorian pub situated in Llanwrtyd. I think that's how you say it. It's Llanwrtyd, Wales.
Llanwrtyd, yeah.
Yeah, Llanwrtyd, Wales, in mid Wales. It's disputed as being Britain's smallest town, but there are a few towns who also claim to that, like Fordwich or Fordwich in England. But at one point, Llanwrtyd, Wales was the smallest in Britain. Anyway, Green heard this conversation about this, who would win in a race between a man and a horse, and he decided to get involved. One of the people arguing was his local huntsman, Glyn Jones, who was adamant that the horse would clearly beat a bloke in a race. But Green thought that the area, given the area they were in, which was rural Wales, and like the Cambrian Mountains and stuff, which is really, as we know, we talk about all the time, how rugged the terrain is, full of like crags and ups and downs. He thought that during this race, that two legs would be better than four when it comes to the quick rises and climbs and descents.
I was going to say the landscape there, the downfall of many a heavy horse throughout history. Yeah.
So he was a historian himself, so that's what he was thinking. So like all good trips to the pub, the conversation became all consuming, and they stopped whatever they were doing, and loads of people joined in this big conversation, and then they decided to put it to an actual test. Now, before I go on, I want to talk a little bit more about Gordon Green, the landlord, and the area of Llanortid. The town, which had a population of about 600 back then, and in the 80s was very much in the doldrums and desperately in need of a boost. But before Green turned up, the last person to put this place on the map was the Reverend Theophilus? I don't know, Theophilus Evans in 1732. This is a classic example of people in Wales just being fucking mental. And he stumbled upon this really healthy-looking frog in a local well, which had a really strong sulfurous stench coming out of it. And he thought, oh, I bet that fucking stink, gubbin-infested water is what's giving this little freak his beautiful green skin complexion. So he saw this frog, right. He thought, that frog's looking good, and that well's looking smelly. This must be connected.
Yeah.
So Evans reportedly drank and bathed in the water, and it cured his scurvy. And the news went viral, and all the top 18th century influencers all came clamouring to head there. And so another spa town popped up. And when I say another, this area is quite famous for having a lot of spa towns, like Llandrindod Wells. A lot of these places that had wells in like the 1800s, they became these Victorian spa towns where loads of Londoners would come to escape the pollution and have a nice holiday.
Yeah.
So this tiny town started to flourish, and these towns are beautiful. They're still well preserved today, and they have these great Victorian buildings. And like, have you been to Llandrindod Wells? It's really nice there.
Yeah, I think I've actually went last year on my trip up. No, on the way up, we went up.
It's a lovely little place to stop off in. So anyway, this tiny town started to flourish thanks to this mad old reverend, and it had in its pomp, it had 50 shops on the high street, glorious pubs, and it received about 4,000 visitors a day during the 1800s, all thanks to this guffy little well.
Come and have a look at, like, go get green as a frog in these fucking guffy wells. Like, it's ridiculous.
However, by the 1930s, Llanortid Wells' glory years were properly fading. Then the NHS was born, and instead of dipping your bollocks in a cesspool, people actually went to the doctors. And then people started, like...
Trusted science, yeah.
Yeah, and then they stopped going to these, like, small towns for holidays. People started travelling to France and to the continent for warmer holidays. And it really did a number on these UK holiday destinations. And then from, like, the mid-20th century onwards, the town was in steady decline. So fast forward to 1975, when Gordon Green first arrived there after a career working in an ice cream factory and leaping out of aeroplanes for the Territorial Army. And he was brought up in the north, in Lancashire, where he met his wife-to-be, Diana, who was a Welsh nurse in London. So when they were there, they had Lady Di and him had three children, and after that, they said to move back to Wales for a different pace of life. But Green was always an adventurous bloke, and he found that running a rural pub in this past its prime holiday destination didn't exactly prove to be like the excitement he was hoping for, or as easy as he thought it would be. So Llanortid Wells is situated in the Cambrian Mountains, and it's a sparse region, sometimes referred to as the Green Desert, which I always think is a bit funny.
Slam.
Yeah, it is. It's not a huge amount around there, but it's pretty, but it can be quite, it's not like heavily forested anymore. It's quite like, it's just a lot of green and a lot of mountains. And the surrounding area is known for its lack of roads and being the hideout for one of the, we're going to cover this as well, by the way, but in this area, it was the world's biggest LSD manufacturing rings. And in the mid-70s, there's an operation called Operation Julie that eventually busted it. But we're going to cover this in a different episode because that operation just sounds fucking mental. And we've actually had someone message us before saying cover Operation Julie. And to add it to our list, but it's, it does seem mental. And the town itself is on the A483, but it's always been difficult to get people to stop there. So it's near quite a busy road, but people just always went through there. And there was like a riding school that used to, people used to go to the riding school. So when they're in the riding school, they didn't stay in the local areas. But when that closed, the hotels, the pubs were really affected. And it was looking like most of the place in this small town was about to become derelict and abandoned. And just, the nature of small towns, they need something to bring in consumers and customers. Green thought back about this, and he thought back when he was in Spain, when he used to visit, when he went to Pamplona. I might have got that wrong, but it's a town where they run the bulls. And he remembered seeing thousands of these visitors dawn in this relatively small place, and he thought he could recreate that in Llanortid Wells and revive the town. So he thought, all right, let's do the very first ever Man v Horse Marathon. And it took place in 1980 on a day that was stereotypically pissing it down. And he managed to, like, so on the very first race, there was a starting line, there was 50 runners and 8 horses. And the reason there was 50 runners, because Green persuaded about a dozen Gurkhas from the local military base to take part to boost the turnout. And if you know Mid Wales, you'll know about the Gurkhas there. But if you're unsure, like, what a Gurkha is, they're like these elite soldiers from Nepal who were recruited by the British Army, and they've been
hard
been
as fuck, like proper top tier, and the dedication and like the fucking they're just
bravery. Nuts. They're renowned for being like incredibly brave. They've been this is for like 200 years. They've been recruiting them into the British Army. They're like incredibly. They're renowned for being really polite and incredibly nice, but also some of the most lethal soldiers. Like in Afghanistan, they were used really effectively throughout all of like the last 200 years. They've been an integral part. And a lot of them train in the Black Mountains in Wales, which is in the Cambria Mountains. So so he managed to rope in these Gurkhas to involve it as well, who are like ultra fit.
But the horses were shitting themselves.
Yeah, and the Gurkhas have those big knives, so they say probably like jabbing them in the sides. The huntsman who I mentioned earlier, that Jones fella, he was one of the races, but he absolutely one of the people on the horseback, and he absolutely smashed it because he knew the course really well. So he darted around the 22-mile course on his horse called Solomon in 1 hour and 26 minutes, nearly a whole hour ahead of the fastest human. But doing a marathon across mountains in 2 hours 20 is like not bad at all. But he was the only person to finish it. So this one Gurkha who did it in that time was the only one who managed to finish it. And afterwards, Merched y Wawr, who were like the Welsh Women's Institute, they were there. They provided like teas and sandwiches, and like Jones's name was etched on this gold piece of gold that hung in the neath of the pub where it all started. Oh, and it was like a really fun communal thing, and it was like a day out for everybody. But it wasn't just like a one day thing Green wanted to do. He was hoping to be a more annual tradition. Just as he'd hoped, words began to spread about this race gradually. And so he was planning to do it every year. And within the second year then, it picked up within the first year, it already picked up sponsorship from Bulmers Cider and then William Hill, the bookmakers. Ooh. And they offered £1,000 to the first winner to beat the horses. And they promised they'd add to that prize every year until someone won it. And Screaming Lord Sutch, who's that musician who founded the Monster Raving Loony Party, and you know that crazy like he's ran for parliament like 40 times. He was invited, so he attended a newspaper caught up, and it was called then the Loony Marathon, and all this like great marketing. It was like, and it was so encouraging and enthusiastic that Green and all his friends, they like decided, oh, do you know what, when people are getting noticing this, let's just do loads of mad events. So then in 1986, they did the first ever bog snorkeling championship in the area.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Everyone, if I say that, I bet you loads of people listening will be like, oh, yeah, I know about that. And you'll see these guys like, so to win, you have to swim as fast as you can through a 60-yard trench cut into a local bog. It's often lauded as the world's weirdest sporting event. And it brought loads of people to this tiny little hamlet / village. Even like so it's called Tiny Hamlets because Sports Illustrated went there and they wrote a whole piece about it, and they like described this tiny hamlet as being this weird and wacky place full of mad sports. And but so both this bog snorkeling and the Man vs Horse competition marathon attracted competitors from all around the world. And I watched some of the videos, and they're absolutely wild because it's not a full length of a marathon, which is like 24 miles I think, or 26 miles. It's 22 miles, so it's a little bit shorter. But they set off from a town in like this tarmac, and then within like 200 meters or maybe a bit longer, they hit a river. It's bogs, it's rivers, it's like ravines. They go up a hill, they go down a hill. And I watched some of the interviews, and some of the horse riders, they say it's absolutely exhausting for them riding on the back of the horse. So it puts into perspective how tiring it is for the runner. And they said the horse has the advantage going up the hill because they're really powerful. They can go up, but they really struggle going down the hill. So it's the opposite for humans. So
that's where the humans get their advantage.
It was only the second year. So in 1981, the very first woman ran it. So usually marathons, it's usually men for a good couple of years, then women. In this, it was like pretty straight away. The women came second. They were doing it as well. So it was men and women. Bar 1 year, it was always men and women. And most of these runners were like proper now. So it's been going on for years and years, but most of the people who do now are actually really established marathon runners. And so many say it's one of the hardest you'll ever do because it's not like a flat race like other marathons.
No, I imagine that the sort of the range of terrain is probably
crazy.
And yeah. You've got to probably,
the weather.
Not one size fits all in terms of like a running technique, I imagine, no. Is it? It's probably really difficult.
Yeah. They interviewed this American guy, and he said, I really like this quote. He went, a good story goes a long way. And I thought that's pretty cool. Mm. He only came here. He's been running like mostly in America. He actually didn't do any run outside of America. But because in this pub 40 years ago, these three guys were chatting about a stupid idea about who would win the race. Yeah. Now people from all over the world come to do this thing. And it is all over the world. Yeah. You have these people from like Germany, Australia, South Africa. Like there's so many people come over to it. One of the guys who first started it, he was like, well, it's not, he was so Welsh, and he goes, oh, it's not your fancy London marathon. Oh no, it's a Welsh one with the real hills, not speed bumps. And it was like really condescending.
It's not your bloody London town marathon. No. It's got horses in this one. It's got fucking nags.
Quite a big, plump old dude, like mocking the London marathon, which is so hard to do. And he's like, oh, it's namby-pamby London. It's a bit mad. So they said it took a staggering 24 years for the first man to finally beat a horse when 27-year-old runner Hugh Lobb completed the race in 2 hours 5 minutes.
Go on, Lobbo.
And he did it 2 minutes faster than the first rider, so he only beat him by 2 minutes. By then, the number of competitors had swelled to 556 runners and 47 horses. And each year, it's been bringing in more and more and more spectators. So that's just the runners.
We've got
to loads of people
to
watch it
at some point.
But oh, how much fun would that be? And like, it's a small town, so everyone just gets on the fucking piss afterwards. And it's like, I love small town piss. Like getting boozed up in those places is so much fun. Lobb, the very first man to beat the horse, he collected $25,000 from Cynthia Payne. So from this lady called Cynthia Payne, who is a madam who ran a famous brothel in Streatham in the 70s. And she used to take payment in luncheon vouchers. So
why wouldn't you have her give the first prize to a human?
I know. Yeah, that's what I mean. They used to just think, we're going to just like make this thing the maddest marathon you can think of. And we're going to get this ex-madam who is famous in like the 70s to be the first person to give the check away. And it's just like really good marketing for these three guys in a pub. So it took 25 years for the first bloke to win it. And then 3 years later, another person did. And the organizer, that Gordon Green, went, it was a bloody German. Right, this blasted German. He came round here and he fucking won it after we've been trying for years. And so this guy called Florian Holzinger, he beat a horse and he earned $3,000. But then in 2009, controversy hit. The organizers deducted time spent on vets checks from the horses' times in addition to the 15 minutes for the delayed start. So horses started 15 minutes behind the humans just so they didn't trample them. But they also added like a time. They deducted time spent for vets checks. This deduction of the additional time enabled the first horse to triumph by 8 minutes. So the horses start 15 minutes behind them, but they take that 15 minutes off them when it comes to the end. Okay. So say if you started at 3 and I start at 3:15, they take that 15 minutes back, so we both start at 3. So, it just means we don't crush you at the race start. So whilst the organisers at the time claimed that the time spent at the vet checks, which was not accurately monitored by a horse-by-horse basis, they said they always deducted that. That hadn't always been the case. So they're like, okay, we'll take the 15 minutes off, but we're also going to take another 15 minutes off or whatever it was for the vet's checks. But that wasn't, sometimes the vet checks didn't take that long and stuff. So the fastest runner, Martin Cox, he would have actually beaten the original horse. He refused to accept the winner's trophy for the human in protest of the decision. So he was like, no, I'm not, should have won this. And also,
I thought you were going to say like there was a doping scandal or something. one of the horses was the Lance Armstrong of the fucking horse versus man world, and he's been doing blood. He's been doing blood.
He's got donkey blood in him. He's got donkey.
He's got donkey. But you know, they can run faster.
It just shows like how serious people take this race. Like there was like genuinely people were really upset about it. And also what's slightly different, the course changes quite a bit. So it changed sometimes to being 24 miles, but those extra 2 miles made it quite unfair for the humans, because the horses then on this flat final 2 mile straight would just always catch up,
smash it. Yeah,
yeah. So there's a scoreboard on Wikipedia as well for every single year with the winner for who won it and stuff like that, and like it's got the name of the fastest horse in their time, the name of the fastest human in their time, then the difference between the human and the horse, then the information about the weather, and then the going. And the going is what I think he described the ground for a race. So it's like, oh, it's soft, it's hard, it's but they really really take this thing really seriously. And on that point, in 2013 the race attracted 65 horses, and with 44 of them end up completing it, which made it the world's largest horse race, as well as it being a marathon.
Oh, no way.
And humans have won it for the last two races, but it's predominantly horses that win. And horses have won, I think, one horse won by only 23 seconds as well, which is wild.
So that seems mad, yeah.
But then often they'll win like a whole 30 minutes ahead of the humans and stuff, so it can be quite varied. But imagine 23 seconds, you see the horse coming behind you and overtaking you.
Brum, brum, brum. Yeah, the hooves.
And I think overall there's been 4 wins to the humans and 39 wins to the horses.
So we're not on top of quite yet. We're not the top species.
A lot of these wins have come more recently for the humans than... I think the humans were the last two, and then... so yeah, this could be the turnaround. And then finally, I got a quote from Green in the Financial Times. This is a really good article where they go and visit him and talk to everyone from this company. So Green set up this kind of like Green Events where they do all these mad different things, and they still go to this day. He's like 88 now, and he's still like, he lives in Penarth as well now, down not too far from us. But he seems an absolute legend. And in one of the quotes when I read from him, he said, "We never bothered to ask the council to do anything because they just didn't have the money and they didn't seem they wanted to get involved with tourism. So we had to do everything ourselves." And the Financial Times say, even as the list of off-beat events grew, with it, the complications and the coordinating, all that stuff that was really hard to do, Green's clarity and purpose like never wavered. He said, "The whole idea was to improve the economy of Llanod to Dwells. We always said that every event had to have that as its main objective. The whole point of these events are to help the community and like really work to making sure this place doesn't..." Like, it's not about them making any money. It's not about them like lining their pockets. Right? Yeah. It's about making sure this community survives. And because of all his work, Green went on to win recognition by the Welsh Tourism Board for outstanding achievement. And he got an MBE thanks to his part in supporting and promoting the area and pretty much keeping this place alive. He's done like an incredible job in keeping the Llanwrtyd Wells relevant. Every single year they get an influx of people going to see this mad as fuck horse race.
That's class, man. We've got to go up and watch that.
I think so. Yeah, I really think we'd be allowed to.
It's gotta be them.
Well, that's the amazing, story, man, of man versus horse. Check out the their Wikipedia for see who's won recently. And if you fancy getting involved, let us. If anyone who listens to this does it, let us know, and we'll definitely come watch you.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to even make the album art for this for this episode. It's gonna be great. A fucking domineering horse chasing down some poor little bugger.
Yeah. Alright, well that's your lot then. Diolchim Grandar. Thanks for listening. And drop us a review and all the shenanigans that we always say. And yeah, if you want to get on the Patreon, there's a link in the description. It's Tales for
Cheers.
Mynd yn y tractor brwm 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 Mynd yn y tractor brwm 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 Lan i'r mynydd i lawr i'r cwm Draw dros y dolydd bwm bwm bwm